Just a heads up, there is some strong language in this episode.
Has ambition ever led you astray?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, geez.
I can over-leverage myself with my ambition.
Okay.
I love to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me significance.
Mm-hmm. Makes you feel significant.
Significant. I need significance.
I'm Rachel Martin, and this is Wildcard, the show where cards control the conversation. Each week, my guest answers questions about their life, questions pulled from a deck of cards. They're allowed to skip one question and to flip one back on me.
My guest this week is Matthew McConaughey.
I believe because I have proven to myself that I can take on more than I thought I could. But what can happen and where ambition has led me astray is you end up with a bunch of freaking campfires and no bonfires.
I was thinking about what sets Matthew McConaughey apart from all his peers. He's obviously very good at capital A acting and has the awards to show it, including an Oscar for his role in Dallas Buyers Club. He's got that aw shucks Texas charm that made him a surefire bet at the box office whenever he popped up in a rom-com. But besides the personality and the skill, what stands out to me in every McConaughey performance is the rhythm of it. There's a swing and a swagger in how he delivers his lines. It's like a call and response kind of thing, but he's doing both the calling and the responding. You hear it in how he says goodbye to his daughter in Interstellar, his money monologue in The Wolf of Wall Street. And if you want to hear it in its most raw form, treat yourself to a rewatch of the 1993 classic Dazed and Confused. So when Matthew McConaughey puts out a book of poetry, it totally makes sense to me. He's always been living in the rhythm of things. I'm so happy to welcome Matthew McConaughey to Wildcard. Hi.
Hey, I like that.
Hey, yeah?
Yeah, the rhythm of things.
The rhythm
the musicality, of things. Calls and responses. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's kind of your vibe. I should say the name of the book. It's called Poems and Prayers by Matthew McConaughey. We're going to talk explicitly about it after round one, but yeah. Congratulations in the meantime.
Thank you.
So you ready?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Round one, memories. First three cards. You, Matthew, pick one, two, or three.
Oh, I pick, but I don't know what's
That's
on
right.
them.
Of course you don't.
Three, the one closest three. To three. Your hand. Yes, that one.
How similar are you to your siblings?
Oh, how similar am I to my siblings? Older brother, Mike, nicknamed Rooster, which has really stuck. I think Rooster's almost, he might be 70-something now. Pat
oh, yeah.
was adopted. He was my Rooster's 10-year-old birthday present. Rooster wanted a little brother for his 10-year-old birthday, so mom and dad adopted Pat in the Methodist home in Dallas.
Wrapping up with a bow. Here you go.
Yes,
sibling.
Here we go. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday. And then years went by. They tried to have another child. Nothing stuck for 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. And then one lucky night, and I think it was slot number 72 in Fort Davis, Texas. It was a good night for mom and dad, and something stuck, and here I come 9 months later, and mom thought I was a tumor for the first 5 months. How am I like them? They're good storytellers.
Mm.
You know, it's very interesting because where you learn something with an adopted sibling,
mm-hmm.
like how much is DNA and how much is environment.
Yeah.
There are certain things that Pat, the middle one, just doesn't have that Rooster and I have. There are certain things that he has that we don't have. And that was all DNA because it was the same exact environment. Humor. Humor is in the top probably three or four for me and my brothers. We really have always sort of to cut sentimentality out of things mm. or to cut a crisis down by its at its ankles, use humor in a very healthy way. And it's almost never, what's the word, out of, it's almost never the wrong time in our
yeah.
family.
We will tell the jokes.
No, while the wound is still fresh, bam, that's when we're hitting it and making sure
that
to.
That doesn't hurt people's feelings?
Not in our family. And I say this all the time, but what bruises my family might break other people's arms. It was inherent yeah. to our family, especially if someone has a little self-conscious thing that they're trying to hide, or you catch somebody in our family acting like, yeah. you know, they're all this. Our family will cut you, find your weak spot, cut you down until you cry uncle. And as soon as you cry uncle and admit it, we hoist you up and mix you your favorite drink.
humor. Well, you were the baby.
I was the baby.
Ridiculed? Were you the victim of that kind of
I was the golden mockery? Boy to them, mama's boy, got away with more, but I remind them all the time, no, I just learned from you two. Mm-hmm. Watched how and where you got caught, and I just got away with stuff better.
Right.
So I was, mama's boy, raised more by my mom probably primarily than they were, because my dad's business got good and he was on the road more. Got very close to my mom. Was able to get close to my dad in the last couple years of his life. And in our family, there's one thing that's sincere and always there with my brothers is they're like, hey, your little brother, you won an Oscar. But who you are, they're not excited or overly impressed. They're less impressed by success. All of us are not. When we succeed, everyone goes, about time. Or yeah, thought you would, or cool. Yeah. But it's never, I think it's an inherent thing that we never really let material things or mortal achievements outside of just who we are and our character be what, now I'm worth more. And if we achieve something in life and think we're worth more because of that, that's the time when my family will pound you down
until you
cry uncle, and then lift you up and mix you a drink.
I love it. Sounds like a nice family to grow up in. Okay, three new cards. One, two, or three?
Three.
What period of your life do you often daydream about?
Wow, what period of my life do I often daydream about? 8 years old, Uvalde, Texas. Hmm. In a diaper. Was I in a diaper at 8?
Wait, maybe hope that you weren't work. In a diaper at 8.
Hang on. Something's wrong. Either the age or the diaper. Let me go back. I think it was the age because.
Okay, diapers are, you're a parent, you know this. Diapers are up to like, I don't know, 2, 3.
You know what? I'm remembering now. It was in the daydream I was 8 years old in the diaper. But in reality, I was 8 and it was shorts. Blue jean cutoff shorts, mm-hmm. No shirt, no shoes, front yard, not backyard, mm-hmm. Huge pecan tree on Getty Street, the big 5-lane street, the main drag through Uvalde. And the St. Augustine, even in the summer, St. Augustine has a very deep roots, and St. Augustine grass needs more water than like Bermuda and stuff, right?
Okay.
Grass, but the roots are really deep. And I remember it was the place I would go to cool off because you can sink your toes down in St. Augustine, cool. And the roots are always cool, no matter how hot the summer day was. Under that pecan tree, finding a pecan, cracking it open, having a pecan that tasted like dessert falling from the tree in that front yard. My mom being able to not even have her eye on me in the front yard, even though there was no fence between me and the 5-lane street that was so busy because I understood the rule. You don't go past the sidewalk that was along right before the curb. My oldest brother coming by and me out there in the yard and me hearing way off in the distance screen right, no, 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 and it getting louder and louder and louder, me knowing what it was going to be, and then me looking for more pecans to grab a hold of because right as they was getting near me, it was him and his buddies coming in a car with the windows rolled down, and right when it would get in front of me, driving by at 35 miles an hour, they'd be mooning me out the car, and they'd be like, no, 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 and on cue, no, 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 fat man, and I'd be, throw those pecans at them at the cross the street, and they'd drive by, no, 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 and it'd fade off, screen left.
Whoa, this is very specific daydreaming.
Because I had a nice little belly. And I was like, ooh, but it's so mad that they call me fat man. But at the same time, because it was my older brother, so kind of honored that they took time out of their day.
That's right. Even to mock you. Yeah.
Little brother.
Yeah. I love that that was the first memory that came to the top of your mind.
That would be another example, talking about siblings and talking about humor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember even then feeling like that was a compliment. As angry as I was that they were calling me fat man, as much as I was throwing those pecans at their car across the street, I felt kind of honored that my older brother was taking time out of his day with his friends to haze little brother.
This is a hard one. I have two boys, and it's hard to teach kids, oh, no, even in the mocking, the fact that your yes. brother's paying attention to you, yeah. just try to reframe yeah, that, yeah, kiddo. Yeah, yeah, just try yeah. to reframe.
And I think it's true. I mean, there's plenty of other things he could have been doing. He cared enough about me to mess with me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like when girls flirt with you and they, like, you know, yeah. like pulling your hair or whatever.
Yeah, what are you doing? Oh, I can't stand that. Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
You kind of like it.
You kind of like it. All right. Last one in this round.
Oh, yeah. One.
One, two, you already knew. One. What do you admire about your teenage self?
Hmm. Teenage self.
Mm.
This is probably what I admire most. So I was straight A's, student council, most handsome, popular.
If you do say so yourself.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me the award.
Yeah.
They said. Okay. But, and I was also, the two fights I got in high school were taken up for the sort of school runt. The one they all called the runt. There's this little black kid with a big afro, and guys would always pick on him. And I got in the fights taken up for him. I was really good friends with Betty Rice. She was the one gothic girl in our school. Mm. Everyone thought she was a lesbian. And that was avant-garde, right? Yeah. And she was really cool. And I really liked her, and she liked me. She wasn't in any of those popular groups, mm-hmm. nor was the one they were calling the runt. I became my best friend later on, a guy, Rob Bindler, my Jewish buddy, who I met him in art class. And so where my life was, hey, let's go out, popular group, Friday night, tailgate, get a keg, chase girls, da-da-da-da-da. My life was extremely extroverted.
Mm-hmm.
He introduced me. Rob introduced me to. What do we go to my house and watch a movie? Mm-hmm. Play some ping pong. Talk about life. Talk about what we're going to do after high school. We go to his place. We'd watch a movie. He was working on a movie script. He's
really?
The one that went
really?
To NYU who called me and gave me the confidence to say, when I said, I don't want to go to law school anymore, I'm thinking about film. He was the one going, you should. You're writing good stories. You got good character. You're a good-looking guy. Maybe you think about it in front of the camera. I couldn't think about that at the time, but mm-hmm. I did. He gave me the confidence to go to film school, which I probably wouldn't be sitting here if I didn't do that. So the fact that I had friends in different circles, in many, many different circles, mm-hmm. and would then include a lot of them in my very popular social circles, and then would go spend time with them.
What'd you learn from people who weren't at the center of social norms and mainstream acceptance?
That there wasn't that much difference.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the main thing. You know, they were getting chastised or put on the outskirts because of their looks or their form of fashion or what's that nose ring or why are you wearing that makeup and, oh, she must be gay and or oh, he's short and he's got that big fro. You know what I mean? And he's a runt. Let's thump him on the head going by every time. I think I got that. Probably, I don't know how much that was in me DNA, but probably my dad was a big take up for the underdog. Not as a savior, but he always just loved the underdog. And I've even, in my life, enjoyed putting myself in the position of the underdog. Through
have you
life,
played
a lot of my
an
successes,
underdog?
Well, played a lot of underdogs. Think of the outcast that I played. People on the fringes.
Yeah, that's true.
Adhering to the manners and graces of the world, but having to try and hustle to survive.
Mm-hmm.
I love being in that underdog position. Shoot, similar, you know, that people ask me about that chest thumping Wolf of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
I do that before a lot of scenes. But what I do that for is to relax my voice, get out of my head, but also to have the room and the crew go, what's the weirdo doing?
People, not everyone knows this, but before you did that monologue in the Wolf of Wall Street,
I'm banging my chest here.
Yeah.
To relax my voice, to deepen my voice, to get my instrument working through my body. Get out of my head. I'm nervous.
Yeah.
Right. I'm working with Scorsese and DiCaprio for the first time. I'm stepping in for one day. They're a well-oiled machine. And here I come. And I've got this scene I'm really excited about, but I'm trying to get out of my head. So I'm going to find the rhythm in that character. It's a very rhythm guy. Yeah, we talked about music as you did in the introduction. I want to get out of my head. Mm-hmm. I want to get past the nerves. I also want to paint myself in a corner that I've got to dig out of. I want everyone going, what's he doing? And if I don't pull it off, I'm still looking like the weirdo. But if I pull it off, they're going, oh, okay. So I like, I'll do things to paint myself, put myself in a corner and to feel like an underdog so I can then go, I got to dig my way out of this to succeed or get what I want.
So we're done with round one.
Yeah.
And now we get to talk about your book.
Cool.
Poems and Prayers. The world needs a lot of them. So the book contains some poems that go back a long ways, right? Like high school?
I think the first one I have in here was right out of high school. And I was in Australia as an exchange student, losing my mind, imploding. Writing 16-page letters to myself and returning those letters with a 17-page letter back to myself.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The Socratic dialogue was extensive.
I'm sure this is going to be a long tangent, but give me the, like, what, you were lonely? What, all the existential angst of a 19-year-old?
I'm coming out of high school, catching green lights. Big, big rite of passage in my family is the day you turn 18. Very disciplined until then. Make it grades, curfews, Well, I did. Had my A's, mom and dad were happy. I turned 18. I got a 4 handicap in golf. I got a job. I got $40, $5 cash in my back pocket at all times. I got a great girlfriend. Car's paid for. I got no curfew. Boom, let's go to Australia. Population 305 in the middle of nowhere. I got no golf clubs. I got no girlfriend. I got no car. And I got a curfew. And I'm put back in my junior year of school because I went mid-semester. And their idea was go to this school with this group of kids for the first half of your year, and then they'll transition to seniors. You'll finish your second half of the year with them.
Okay.
I had graduated. All right? So I'm in English class doing creative writing, and I'm getting red marked Fs everywhere. You can't use that language. That's a contraction. I'm like, ma'am, I passed that test. I know how to write grammatically correct, but I'm trying to creatively write. Well, not in this class, you won't. Ooh. So I start skipping class, going to the library, found Lord Byron. My friends at the time were U2's Rattle and Hum, Maxi Priest album, Maxi Priest. And then I picked up a really good NXS album while I was over there because they were Australian. Those were my friends, besides the pen and the paper.
So you're writing to yourself.
And the poetry of the me not having any of the crutches, not having anyone to talk to or bounce ideas off of, and being very confused at a time when a young man's trying to find identity anyway, but now I'm completely in a different place. It was frustrating, and I was trying to make sense of it, and so I went into poetry to make sense of the existential questions of why, where, the mendacities of the world, the bullshit people do. You know, you leave the country, you leave where you are, what you've known for 18 years, you learn a lot about who you are. You get objective about who you actually were. And I'm going to start getting objective about who I was, how I grew up, what my family grew up on, what Texas meant, what America meant, what it didn't mean, what it shouldn't mean, what was going on in the world, what we were, you know, what do we call success? Mm-hmm. What do we reward? Mm-hmm. And the first poem I wrote was sort of I put fangs into that.
Mm-hmm. And that wasn't a one-off. I mean, you've been writing poems for a lifetime, huh?
Yeah.
What does it give you that writing prose doesn't or acting doesn't?
You said a lot of it in the introduction. I do believe there's a rhyme to the rhythm of life. And that's not always just in the good times. It's when you step in the potholes and when you miss the mark as well. That rhythm of life, when life is rhyming, I don't feel like it's compartmentalized. I'm doing different things, but I don't have to. For instance, prayer. Why? I pray as a ritual, but I think when I'm most spiritually strong, all day feels like a prayer. I'm going through life and I'm seeing the beauty. I'm seeing truth. I'm looking at the ugly stuff, owning it, admitting it, not turning an eye from it.
Yeah, you read the book.
To look at it.
Clear declarative sentence. Prayer is to be aware.
Yeah, to pay attention to ourselves.
Yeah. But I get the sense from reading your book that you actually sit in contemplative prayer from time to time.
I do.
Are you praying to a God? To a divinity?
Yeah. Yeah. Praying to God, yeah. And God for me is not a person. I love those deep Southern Baptist churches. We talking, we're going to pray the prime mover, the way maker. You know, it's not a human, it's a entity, it's a place, it's a space that's just higher in its own frequency that's not really reachable, I believe, here, but worth pursuing to proclivate or to try and imitate.
Yeah. Why was this the right time to release this book?
Because I was feeling doubt. I was feeling myself getting a little short-sighted and cynical. Started objectifying women and men and looking down my nose like, I'm probably not worthy. They're going to fuck that up. Ah, shit, that's just the way it is, isn't it? Well, now wait a minute. Seeing clearly, I think there's a lot of reasons to look around and not see things to believe in, people to believe in, reasons not to believe at all, a lot of reasons to doubt. But the way we see that, to either concede or go, I'm looking above that. I'm going to believe in above that. I'm going to believe in a higher ground that I believe we can pursue and maybe attain. And since I'm not finding it with the facts and the evidence, I'm going to go to ideals and dreams and divinity to say, don't quit believing in that. Call it beginner's mind, whatever. Don't quit believing in that. And though you may not achieve that, the world may not achieve that, that is the pursuit. Yeah. That's the ultimate pursuit. So don't let that get dusty. So dust yourself off, McConaughey. Pull some weeds between your old nugget and your heart. Get those two communicating a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, not only I need it, I talked to a lot of people that are like going, that's what I'm looking for as well.
Yeah. We're going to round two. This is insights. Three new cards.
Two.
Has ambition ever led you astray?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, geez. I don't even have an example in my head, but I'm sure it has. Yes. I love to accomplish. It gives me significance.
Makes you feel significant.
Significant. And I need significance.
Ah.
I need to feel it.
That's an interesting thing to know about yourself. Yeah.
I can over-leverage myself with my ambition.
Okay.
I believe because I have proven to myself that I can take on more than I thought I could. But what can happen and where ambition has led me astray is you end up with a bunch of freaking campfires and no bonfires. Then all of a sudden, I look at my desk going, geez, oh man, I got to compartmentalize 9 things today. And these are all new things, and they're all exciting on their own.
Sure.
But there's only 24 hours in the day. So I don't have time to, I don't want to take for granted the bonfires that I have built.
Yeah.
So I got to keep putting wood on those.
Yeah. One of them's a family.
And I've got through 8 of those things today, and I haven't 8 campfires today, and I'm tired. It's time to go to bed. Whoa. You get one, you didn't finish the 9th through campfire, and you didn't tend the bonfire you already had built. Maybe we need to get rid of some of those campfires. But I would say that's where ambition has led me astray at times. It is also, I've done some things ambitiously, and I won't talk out of school with who it was, that I chased, I succeeded. I may not be sitting here right now if I wouldn't have chased those things, but I bruised some people along the way. And I look back and I regret that. You didn't say goodbye the right way, McConaughey. You felt like so much you had to have singular focus on this new ambition, which was a wonderful ambition, yes, but you didn't need to leave. You didn't need to burn that bridge. And then I go, well, I want to go back and repair that. Then all of a sudden more time goes by and he goes, well, I can't repair it. I just want to go, I'm sorry for it.
Did you?
And you go, some of them, yes. Some of them, I have not. And couple that I went back and said, I could have handled this exit better, this transition that we had. Mm-hmm. They had already forgiven me. They were like, don't, dude, I was happy to feel that, oh, your threshold of sensitivity is higher than maybe even theirs was, and it was okay, but I still didn't mean that my feelings were invalid. Mm-hmm. And I've still got probably a couple out there which I could go back and go, hey, just want to say, for what it's worth or not, and I don't want to come in here and be condescending. If you've already moved on, if you're like, what the hell are you talking about? Give me a second, listen, I bogeyed back there. I could have handled that better. I could have still done what I did.
Yeah.
But I didn't have to turn a blind eye.
Yeah. I think there's not a time horizon on those things. Right. I think you always get to go back.
Mm.
I have to remind myself of that, too, because we all have those. Three note cards. One, two, or three?
One.
One. What's something you feel has passed you by?
I don't think I'm ever going to be what was then a Washington Redskin, but is now a Washington Commander running back.
Damn it.
John Riggins. 3.4 yards a carry. That means if you run first down, you're 3.4. You run second down, you're 6.8. You run third down, you are 10.2, just enough for a first down.
Which, can we just clarify this? I know you've talked a lot about it. You are from Texas.
Yeah.
This is a...
I grew up outside of Dallas.
Notorious rivalry
that was
between
the rivalry.
Cowboys.
Yes.
And you are a Commanders fan.
I was.
That franchise.
Since I was 4 years old. Part of it was we were in Longview, Texas, East Texas, behind the Pine Curtain, the big thicket, the Hicks. Dallas was Paris.
Okay. As it's often referred to.
And when any little Hicks from East Texas went to Dallas, at that time, I just remember a little down my nose, sort of, oh, you're
they didn't
from there.
Want you.
And I was like, right here. Uh-uh.
Your
I'm watching.
Commander franchise fandom is a... like a screw you to the elites of Dallas.
Then, and when I was 4 years old, it was a combination of that and the fact that when we would watch Westerns, I was always rooting for the Native Americans. I liked the guys with the bows and arrows that had analog, that didn't have the man-made pistols and stuff, that were riding bareback. I was a fan of them. The underdogs again, okay? Then you combine that with the fact my favorite food's hamburgers. And at the time, there's number 55, Chris Hamburger, who's now in the Hall of Fame.
I was really
so things are really
curious
adding up,
of that.
Right? You with
right
me?
Yeah. It seems totally obvious.
So when you're 4 years old, you're like, are you kidding me? So it was the one game I could stay up on Monday night instead of have to go to bed at 9 o'clock. I could stay up as late to watch the Redskins. I was at the last game at RFK. I was in the first game at Jack King Cook, the first game at FedEx. And I've always been. I actually like the Cowboys more now, but still, I will always be a what was then a Redskin, now Commander fan.
I think it's a sensible thing to think that that particular achievement has passed you by. I don't know.
Which achievement?
Being a professional football player.
Oh.
I don't think your body can do it.
Well,
know you're ambitious, but
part,
I think
look,
you're
that's,
right.
That's part of, and I have this one of the poems. Oh, that's part of getting older. The old body doesn't necessarily mind what the head tells it to do as much anymore, but. Still hanging in there.
Yeah.
Found tennis. Knees feel good.
Tennis.
Back feels good.
A little different. Yeah. A little different. Okay. Last one in this round. One, two, three.
One.
What's a lesson you keep learning again and again?
Repeat offender. Guilty.
Yeah.
Oh. Hey, while I'm thinking about it, because I know I got a few, but I'm not finding any on recall. What's a lesson, Flip, you think you need to keep learning?
Okay. I mean, for me, it comes down to patience. On the daily, I see kind of the worst version of myself as an impatient person. I'm impatient with my children. I'm impatient with work. I'm impatient with the pace of change. I want things to move faster. And it doesn't bring out the best in me. Honestly. And I just when I think I've like, okay, I've done the meditation. I know to do the grown-up timeout. I can do it. And then something will trigger it and I'll be off to the races again. And
when, if, is there a time where it's too much patience?
Is there such a thing? Yeah.
I think
there
so.
Is such a thing as too much patience. Because sometimes you need to just act.
The buck stops here,
right.
Or I'm tired of preparing
That's
for this
right.
thing. Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's find out.
Let's go. I have an action bias. Right. That's part of my thing yeah. is that if something's going, then I'll just be like, go, make a decision. I don't yeah. even care if it's the wrong one. Yeah. Let's just choose right. and move on. But
which can reap many rewards.
It can.
Because I know I've done it, and I know a lot of people who walk the this or that for a week and a month and a year and a decade and 2 decades, yeah. and you're like, just choose
one. I'm bad with indecision.
Jump.
Yeah, go.
And you'll find out.
That's right. So that's my answer. What's yours?
I agree with you there. I think that the changes we're talking about, I think, are going to have to be a punk rock rebellion of with some amount of rage. I don't mm-hmm. think a kumbaya, mm-hmm. let's be patient. Not the times that that's going to, there's a time and a place for that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that that's going to create changes in a way that are going to really be evolutionary. Mm-hmm. You know, I do have a similar thing. And now that I work with my wife and we're partners face forward in our tequila brand, Pantalones.
Oh, yeah.
She was hesitant about working together that way. She's like, our marriage is pretty good. And I'm always I'm partner with you in all your business stuff, but I've never been face forward with you.
Yeah.
He was like, you sure you want to do this? We talked about it for months before she finally came over and said, yeah. And that's been part of what I'm learning from working with her is that patience. I'm similar to what you're saying. I'm momentum. I come on, boom, come on. Affirm, next. Yes, mm-hmm. I got momentum. Offense, mm-hmm. I'm throwing deep. Yes, let me go run the score up. And she, at every next level, stops. Stop. 360 view.
Right, let's
look around. What changed? What did the last decision change across the board?
Yeah.
And she's picked out quite a few things. Like, oh, that's a good question. Never thought of that. But it can be also frustrating as someone who wants to play office to go, I don't have time for the pause right now. Come on, I'm rolling. I don't want to get conscious, actually.
Right.
You know what I mean? Let's go.
So now we are into the last round. Beliefs. This is your sweet spot.
One, two, or three?
Two.
Do you think there's more to reality than we can see and feel?
Oh, yeah. Look, I don't know what the heck it means, but I just... Remember Gene Hackman moved on months
yeah.
ago?
Yeah. Passed away. Mm-hmm.
I'd never thought or dreamed of Gene Hackman. I had a dream of Gene Hackman. I woke up and told him I had a dream of Gene Hackman. I said, this is a while back.
Before he died?
3 days later, they found him. And I'm like, wow, it was a premonition. Then I find out, no, he had actually been in his house and died days earlier. And I'm like, oh, geez, was that dream at the time.
Did you know him?
No.
Huh.
I don't know why last night in real time, I woke up at 4:30 in the morning. I was driving a car.
Okay.
Talking to my guy riding passenger seat, having a discussion. First time I've ever dreamed of this person has ever been in my dream. Guess who it was?
Who?
Robert Redford. Who had just woke up this morning and found out he moved on. I don't know what that means. I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, it's a vision. But there's things to see and feel that are unexplainable that I think we all do. Whether we try to, don't try to, whether we didn't try to, and they snuck in anyway. So I don't know what that means, but that's not explainable. And I would call that the soul and some things that we can obviously feel and see in reality more than we do.
Last question, Matthew. One, two, or three?
One.
What does it mean to be a good person? Why are you laughing?
What does it mean to be a good person?
Yeah.
Good person?
Yeah, good person.
Good person.
It's not, I know this is something you've thought of.
Well, I work on being as good of a person. Or I don't want to start, I have a poem in there about the difference between a nice guy and a good man.
Yeah.
You know, good man, there is a difference. I've been a nice guy before. It's great. We all know the nice guys. Yeah, they're cute. They kind of get along with everything. Great. Easy to have around all the time. Good ambiance. Easy ambiance. Good man can be great ambiance unless you go against their ideals. And then that good man, that nice guy, a good man is not a nice guy because they have things they believe in and don't believe in, things they'll stand against and stand for. Much harder than being a nice guy. But what does it take to be a good person? Oh, my gosh. I mean, look, I go between, you know, we sell this find your true self. I prescribe to that to a certain extent. I also like Bob Dylan's version. What do you mean find your true self? Just be the creation. Hmm. Whatever you want to create, be it. Bit more carny, but probably just as true. And isn't in an argument you could say whatever creation you make yourself, well, that is another, that's, you're all those. That is your true self. To be a good person, though, I don't want to go with the word good as much as I believe in ethics and morals. I got to watch the morality of good.
Yeah.
Because part of why the world's doing this so much is we've started playing God, good and evil. Yeah. Good and evil. Uh-uh, evil. Good, evil, good. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what maybe we ought to, you know, maybe we ought to deal with, like, you know, better or worse. Let God deal good and evil. You know what I mean?
Totally.
At the same time.
I think that's a great answer.
You know, at the same time, that doesn't mean we should just go around middling the fiddle and appeasing. Yeah, yeah. I think we need judgment. You have no identity without judgment. You need to be discerning. Mm-hmm. Need to be able to make choices. Now, part of what is hard about today is people seem to love trying to not understand you.
Yeah.
It's like I went away one time with all my bad reviews 10 years ago. Thick book. I read them. Learned a lot. Also, had a lot where I was like, oh, this SOB wrote this before they went and even saw the performance. They already had it in for me.
Right.
They were discount already it. Going, yeah. I'm going to misunderstand. I don't care how what it is. It's written.
Right.
We suffer from that a lot right now. When you're talking, I'm already thinking about, well, how can I misunderstand her and say something alternative and contrast this? Because then I've got an original and I've thrown a spear. Hey, check that out. More likes? Yeah. Did I get more popular on that? Great. Oh, yeah. They went up. I was a contrarian. That's a bit like the cynic. That's easy, man. Mm-hmm. What's hard is to go, okay. So that's why you believe that. And that's, all right, I may think differently, but now I understand where you're coming from. Now we're in a conversation and I've found a comparison. I've found a through line.
Right.
Between us as humans.
Right.
Agree or disagree.
Before, and that is a short supply.
That's a short supply. And
yeah,
we got to have to fight to get that to be less short supply.
We end the show the same way every time, with a trip in our memory time machine.
Yay.
Yeah, you into that? I feel like you would be.
Anywhere?
We're going to the past.
Okay.
We're going to the past, where you pick one moment to revisit. It's not a moment you want to change anything about.
Okay.
Just a moment you want to linger in a little longer.
Oh.
Which one do you choose?
Oh, there's another one I'm going to bring back from that same sort of time in childhood. My mom was my kindergarten teacher in the schools down the road. We'd ride our bikes there. And remember, there was a Kellogg's commercial, Fruit Loops, Toucan Sam would come flying through the room animated. And he'd go, right behind you, baby. Right behind you, baby. And me and mom would ride bikes. She'd ride up and I'd swerve behind her. And whoever was in front, the gig was, you go, if I was in front of me, hey, mom, back there? And if she was in front, she'd go, Matthew, you back there? And the response was always, right behind you, baby. Huh. Right behind you, baby. Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey, his new book is right beside me.
Right behind you, babe.
His new book is called Poems and Prayers, and it's been such a pleasure. Thank you.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Listening. If you had fun with this one, then I'd recommend going back and listening to my conversation with Jeff Goldblum. He's another actor who is all about the rhythm and the musicality of the craft. In fact, he would not stop singing. It was awesome!
This episode was produced by Lee Hale and edited by Dave Blanchard. It was mastered by Robert Rodriguez with engineering help from Sina Lofredo. Wildcard's executive producer is Yolanda Sangweni, and our theme music is by Ramtin Arablouei. A special thanks to Nikolai Hammer and the NPR Visuals team for their extra help on this one. And in case you'd like to see a video version of the episode, search for NPR Wildcard on YouTube. We're going to shuffle the deck and be back with more next week. I'll talk to you then.